Route 616, your home for all fans of Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. This is episode fucking 60 of this bitch.
And much like Discovery with Shark Week, we've just decided to make everything Hulk Week from now on. So welcome to Hulk Week, take two.
Please, oh, God.
Please don't.
Unfortunately, next week is still over half Hulk Week, so there's some...
Next week's when we get the bad parts of the Hulk arc.
Yes.
Can we exhibit some semblance of dignity during this and just, you know...
Hulk. We're talking about Hulk.
Yes.
From 1964 or 5. How much dignity do you expect this to
my
show?
My
on a
like
Friday night, yeah. We're talking about Hulk.
My dignity's on a street corner somewhere or something. I don't know.
Yeah. How much is it charge?
Oh, shit.
Ask her for a friend.
Well, I guess for once I'll chime in with some pop culture related type deal.
Okay.
Well, not as much pop culture as much as video games related.
I swear to fuck, if you say Monster House, I'm gonna...
No.
I didn't know they made a Rob Zombie video game.
No, I got that Red Dead Redemption 2 game that's all, you know, the... Mm-hmm. The all the
pop culture. 7-year-old game.
Hey, I'm a little behind. But no, it's been really fun. I haven't been invested in the story-based game since Marvel Spider-Man from 2018.
No, the Red Dead series is really good. I like all three of them.
It is fun, yeah.
Although I've only watched Red Dead Redemption 2, I haven't had a chance to play it.
Oh, you should have gotten it while it was on sale. It goes on sale quite often, though, so you'll...
Yeah, I'll get it at some point.
I've been shocked how much... I didn't think I'd actually like it as much as I am, so it's been a nice surprise for me.
Might be worth going back to Grand Theft Auto at some point, because you'll probably have less of an issue with it using a controller.
Yeah.
Because even for dedicated PC gamers, you don't drive with keyboard and mouse.
Yeah. I did better when I played it on my...
just don't work.
Yes, you do.
I did better when I played it on my PS4, but I didn't really play it a ton either then. No, I'm new school.
Yeah.
I'm a controller, baby. Wah, give me my controller.
I'm not sitting there trying to juggle analog inputs for gradual turning.
Right.
Dan's ancient, but he knows his way around a keyboard.
Oh, I do. Anytime you guys want to go one-on-one on an FPS with me, I'll happily use my keyboard.
I play FPSs with keyboard and mouse.
There
I play them badly, but I can do keyboard and mouse for that. And it's not like I'm better with a controller. I'm just bad at action games in general.
I'm just bad at shooters.
I've come to terms with that fact a long time ago.
Anybody else have anything for the pop culture round? Mine was kind of out of date, but new to me.
Well, on a completely unrelated but amusing note, Moira informed me that apparently they're rebooting Totally Spies.
Okay.
I know, right? I don't know if that means anything to Bill, but...
I have heard that there is a show called Totally Spies.
It's an interesting little show.
It was fun.
I have never seen an episode or even an ad for it, I don't think.
Oh, boy. It's what was in the late 90s, early 2000s?
I think it was
like
early
a 2000s show, I think.
Yeah. I know Moira watched it when she was little.
Yeah.
And she thought it was funny, and it was, to be fair. It was a funny little show.
It was decent.
Not all made for children, is more the point.
No.
There were a lot of little moments that were very adult.
It was
but
one of the.
Child wouldn't have gotten me.
It was one of the friggin' Oh, what's that channel?
Nickelodeon?
No.
Network?
It's the Cartoon Network, but the Canadian, like the one that led into it.
Teletoon? Because that's Canadian, and I don't think Totally Spies was Canadian.
Yeah, I think Totally Spies is Canadian.
It is, yeah. Yeah,
it's a Maritime production.
It was on the same network as, yeah, it was Teletoon.
As the kids from the mall, whatever that was called.
No, it's
part of the same group that, like, remember the
Sweet
series?
Sweet 16.
Sweet 16, yeah.
There was a spinoff to Oldie Spies that was, they did. They had Johnny Test.
Okay, I do know Johnny Test. That was a great show.
Which was a sequel of the original Test
Sketch.
Series.
Do you remember Planet Sketch?
I don't remember that one.
Okay, yeah, they had that as well. That was Canadian.
They did decent stuff. Totally Spies was not the worst, but it wasn't the best either. It was something I would watch. It was a fine little show. I'd watch it if there
was
nothing else on.
It was silly fun. It was silly fun. Again, it was. Although it was made for little girls, it was more than one moment in the show that really was very
adult. Was kind of in the early evening slot. It wasn't fully in the afternoon slots or anything. It would be early to mid-evening type deal.
Yeah.
So like an older...
Yeah, it was like right before Sweet 16 type deal, because that was an edgier one too.
So it's targeted at like 13, 14-year-olds probably.
It's in the... Because Teletoon used to do the thing where they were fully kid cartoons, and then at late night they were fully Cartoon Network adult cartoons, and they had the in between stretch where it was they were kind of teetering the lines.
Yeah,
and that was one of those.
Yeah. Anyway, if you've seen Totally Spies, just an update is apparently they're rebooting the show, so this could be amusing.
It could either be good or something that 6 months from now all Totally Spies fans will deny ever happened.
I'm sure Dan
like
will update us.
Indiana Jones's After 3.
Yeah, well, oh, it was so bad. Ow. Oh, it's like having a war wound.
This is for those 7-Up comments the other week. Burns, you thought I forgot.
No, I knew you'd remembered. Are you drinking 7-Up?
Yeah.
No, I'm drinking Island Soda.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
It's a weird Canadian pop that pretends to be tropical, and I have no idea what it's supposed to actually taste like, but I'm addicted to the stuff.
Okay.
It's one of those flavors that, like, just... It's impossible to pin down what the flavor is actually supposed to be.
It's probably pineapple or mango or something.
Must be some
mycopro
in there.
For anyone wondering why I'm laughing, including Dan, that's a deep cut from our wrestling chat.
Okay. No problem.
Couldn't help myself.
Unless somebody's been watching Ahsoka, whatever the hell it is.
Ahsoka,
yeah, which I have not been watching.
I will
can't take any more bad Star
point.
Wars. I just can't.
I don't think it doesn't. It actually looks like it's good Star Wars for once.
It's probably not going to live up to the source material.
There hasn't been a good Star Wars since Rogue One. So
yeah, and
people love the Andor
comes
show.
From one of the most beloved Star Wars properties of all time. I don't trust them to live up to that standard.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hard standard to live up to, so...
I think people are probably going to live up to that standard. Yeah, I think people are probably going to end up pretty disappointed by that show.
Aiden Christensen looks to be on the redemption arc of a lifetime with his returns as Anakin and Vader in these new shows.
Sure.
He's been getting all these applause and round of applause and everything at all these talk show fans and
oh God, he must
all
have accidentally
fans.
Emoted when he was saying a line or something. Right? I'm sorry. I just every single Star Wars TV show they've tried has been just unredeemably bad. So.
People love the Andor.
I was gonna say I heard Andor was good, and isn't the Mandalorian good? Like, it's a rip-off of spaghetti westerns, but it's still good.
Yeah, it's about as original as a kick in the nuts. But, I mean, Mandalorian, I think they had one or two good episodes out of all of it, but it's just the same thing over and over and over and over again. We've had three seasons.
So is it really just people coasting off of Is it really just coasting off people finding Yoda cute?
It's coasting off two things.
The first season... The first season is pretty weak. The second season improves because it expands on its side cast and has the introduction of an actually good villain for the series with Grand Moff, whatever his name is. But it's the guy that plays Gus from Breaking Bad.
Lord. Yeah.
It's the guy that plays Gus from Breaking Bad, and he's an awesome actor, and he brings a lot to the show that was missing, because there was not a lot, besides coasting off Baby Yoda, Grogu, there wasn't a lot really going on for substance in the first season.
No, the first season was literally fan service.
The first season's kind of mediocre if you really look at it, but...
It's not that great.
They've added... The second season was... I liked a lot more, and I haven't seen the third season yet. Yeah.
Disney needs to just stop.
I think we've been saying that for, like, years.
They need to get properties taken away from them. Marvel needs to go back to being its own thing, and Lucasfilm needs to go back to being its own thing, and then we might actually get some good, like, creative stuff in those properties. Because Disney just keeps hitting the fan service button rather than actually trying to push the properties forward.
On that note, you guys must be excited for more Rey movies.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think we talked about that on the podcast yet.
No, we didn't.
That was announced like a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
more sequels or
so what I was saying about fan service. Did they miss the part where, like, everyone hated Rey?
I don't know.
They're just trying to Captain Marvel past it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that everybody hated Rey.
I like Rey.
In the first film, she wasn't that bad.
She was fine in the first film, but everyone. Perhaps I should clarify to everyone hated where Rey ended up. She was good. The judge hated that she was an empowered woman. And the people that actually cared about Star Wars hated that they took the bullshit cop-out of, she's a Skywalker.
The last and, one is...
Palpatine. That was the name.
The last one is the main issues late. For her.
That her being a Palpatine sort of thing was just a little stupid, but...
I wanted her to be neither. It would have been so much better if she wasn't tied into the past families. And just had her own destiny.
I kind of wanted her...
Well, it set it up to be that way.
I know, and that was a mistake.
I wanted her to be Obi-Wan's illegitimate child. I really did.
That also would have been good.
If she was tied to anybody, I wanted it to be Obi-Wan. Because that would have been probably the coolest...
Yeah. I liked the idea of here's this other person who's just not tied into it. Who ends up being the savior. It's not one family that's everything great.
Yeah.
It's like, here's this random other person. She's the one who ends up being the savior this time.
Yeah, and I want to... They started off on the wrong track with the first three, the prequels, with this whole midichlorian foolishness. That kind of took a lot away from the mysticism of what the Force is. But when they did the first movie with Rey, it wasn't that bad. Like, as far as she was concerned, I didn't mind her character.
I thought the first movie was pretty good.
Funny.
Like, it was a rehash, but
storyline wise, it was horrible. But Rey was.
But it was well done,
strong...
and it was a reset to what people expected from Star Wars after a lot of disappointment with the prequels.
It was a copy and paste story with awesome old Han Solo and a. good death for that character.
Well, yeah, that kind of ruined it for me. It was like, why are you bringing him back? Just let him die.
So they could kill him.
Yeah, but he wanted to die off after the second movie.
They didn't want to kill him. Killing him was a contingent on, or was one of the reasons Harrison Ford agreed to do it. He's like, I'll only do it if you kill him.
Yeah, and...
And it was smart,
because
it was a good character.
So they
could have
just not done it. It ended up being good, but Dan has a point. They could have just not done it, and it wouldn't have hurt anything.
Yeah, there's no need for him to be in the film.
They were going to bring back the old characters, so...
Well, yeah, but the thing is, they didn't need to. I mean, Luke could have been the only one.
And that's a lot of my complaint. they tied it too much to the existing characters instead of letting the new characters shine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Luke was the only character they really kind of technically needed to bring back to help Rey.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there was no point in Solo or Princess Leia being in the film, even Chewie. There was no point in being in the film. They served zero purpose.
They were there as fan service so that people could go, I remember them. They were cool.
But they got in the way of character development for the new characters. I mean, all you had to do was show the Millennium Falcon. Right?
They didn't even need the fucking Falcon. They stretched hard to get that into it.
They did. But, like, there was just no need for it. It should have been something new, because one of the things I liked about Rogue One was all the characters were new, right? They were different. It was a complete standalone story that, you know, led into the first three, and it was fun. It was a great story, great characters. They started out about the first half hour of Rey's story was great.
Yeah,
and then it just started falling apart.
It would have been like, so good if they had their new band of, like, Rey, Finn, probably Rose.
Yeah, absolutely. But they
had to keep tying it back to what they had already done. And that's what I was getting at with Disney being terrified of creativity. They want to just keep going to the same beats that have already made the money.
Yeah, the same beats that have made the money. But a lot of what's made the money is pasteurizing other people's stories, right? Disney's original content has never been that strong.
Yeah, well, when I say made the money, in this case, I'm talking about the parent companies, or the companies they've acquired, because it really made Lucasfilm money.
True. But, like you say, Disney's not really known for their original content. It never has been, right? It's always been, let's take... You know, this Grimm's
fairy tale or whatever. Disney movies are mostly repackaged fairy tales.
They are. Snow White, Littlest Mermaid. You know, all these are just original fairy tales that they...
Shut up, Snow White.
If we want to go really offensive, let's take repackaged actual history and make it into a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Like Pocahontas.
Well, again, they just pasteurize everything.
Yeah, it's so much worse when they do the sanitization on actual horrific elements of history.
There is. I mean, why can't they take Snow White out behind the burn and shoot her?
Hey.
What?
So you'd rather they rip off old Yeller instead of...
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to rip something off, do old Yeller. Right? Oh, look, it's the Little Mermaid.
Right.
Happening after the performance of that first Little Mermaid. Oh, wait, they've already announced the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not going to be any better than DC's attempt at the cinematic universe or...
Oh, has anybody seen Blue Beetle?
Not yet. I keep meaning to, but I haven't had a chance.
I completely forgot it came out in the interim.
You and about 75%
Everybody?
Of the population?
We talked about this like two podcasts ago, and I was planning on going, and then I forgot it happened until right now.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
I will probably forget that it happened again after this, and then it'll go out of theaters, and you'll be like, did you see Blue Beetle? And I'll be like, shit, and then I'll have to buy it off YouTube.
Yeah, I
still
which
probably is
see
a better
it.
Idea anyway, because it'll cost me $5 instead of like 30.
Yeah, no, I want to see it. I'm keen.
I do too, actually. I make fun of it, but DC's probably got the best, major cinematic universe going right now.
Yeah.
Not saying it's great, but it's better than what Marvel's been pumping out for the last couple of years, and it's definitely better than what's going on with Star Wars.
Unfortunately, you're right. It's kind of a disturbing truth. But, I mean... I shudder for what's coming in the future. They say superhero movies are on their deathbed. I'm beginning to think they are.
They're definitely dead. I freaking love superhero movies. In, like, the last couple of years, I just don't want to go to them anymore.
Well, I mean, not every movie can be, you know, a sequel to Ghost Rider. You can't get Nick Cage to play every superhero. Right?
So I just wish that
sequel
involved...
Well, he finally got to play Superman, so...
Yeah, I just wish that sequel involved someone that had seen the original Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And yes, yeah. I include Nicolas Cage, who was in it. Yeah. Because he clearly hadn't seen any in the original Ghost Rider, or at least understood what they were doing in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that the original Ghost Rider was good, but the sequel didn't even make sense off of the story beats from the first one.
True. But I think Nick Cage redeemed himself playing Dracula. In Renfield, he's great. He's just great.
I've heard that.
Renfield was very good, but not necessarily a great Dracula movie.
It's a terrible Dracula film. But Cage does a fantastic Bela Lugosi. Just pitch perfect Lugosi. Right, it's just incredible.
I enjoy Nick Cage's brand of insanity.
Well, I'm a huge fan of the original Dracula film, so, you know, watching Renfield.
He likes to be taken back to his 40s.
Oh. That was cold. Yeah, okay. There's so many places I could go with that, but I thought Nick Cage did a great job. I really did. So anyway.
Oh, that reminds me.
Yeah.
How was the Boat Dracula movie?
Really, really good. Ryan would hate it because you actually have to sit and watch it for more than 5 minutes. Right, it's not made for the TikTok generation. It's a proper freaking movie. And it helps if you know the story. Like, if you know the book. Because they do force you to sit and watch the film with dialogue. Yeah, I know, Ryan. There's, like, dialogue in this, right? It's not action in every scene. There's scenes where they just talk.
And that's shit I like plot. That.
Yeah, but they further the plot
I don't
by,
like
by dialogue.
Action.
Yeah, but, you know, you wouldn't be able to sit through it. You just wouldn't.
Probably not.
From our experience, recommending good movies with a lot of talking, you wouldn't sit through it.
Yeah. And I'm about a third of the way through Two Towers now, so... I'm chugging right along on Lord of the Rings and loving every second of it.
They are some great movies.
The cold. I meant the book, you twat.
I know that. That's why I paused for a second. I'm like, do I go there?
Yeah,
you would. Hey, pal, you're just lucky we didn't record this on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's Lord of the Rings was a book originally, Ryan. They're written by a guy named Tolkien.
I absolutely adore the Lord of the Rings books, too, so...
Yeah.
I've read The Hobbit, and by read, I mean listen to an audio version.
Yeah.
That doesn't really give you a good impression of Lord of the Rings, because Hobbit was a children's book.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not me being mean. Like, literally,
well,
no, it
is. Well,
it's
I read
Hobbit
it in a grade 6, so...
A... Yeah, it's intended to be a children's book... And then Lord of the Rings is the more mature adult fantasy.
Yeah, you want to impress
and
me
then
by...
And then Silmarillion is like the textbook.
Yeah, you want to read a children's book and impress me, Ryan, read Watership Down.
No, I'll just go read Bone.
No, Watership Down. Read it. I dare you. I freaking dare you. It's a kid's book. Read it.
And you told him not to watch The Seasoning House, and here you are. Here, watch Watership... Read Watership Down. They're both
equally
dramatic.
It's Seasoning House for children.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, not just even, saying.
That wasn't even much of an exaggeration.
No, it's really not.
Oh, shit.
But no, seriously, Ryan, I dare you.
It is a fantastic. I joke about how dark and twisted it is, but it is a fantastic story.
It's incredible. Or The Plague Dogs, either one. Either one. I dare you. They're both written for kids.
They are technically children's books.
Yep.
I encountered both of them as an adult, and they fucked me up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I cannot reread The Plague Dogs. I read
I will not reread either of those.
or it was as
they're on that list of art that was absolutely fantastic that I will never approach again.
Yeah.
Along with The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh my God. When I found out they were making that into a film, I was just like, really? Oh,
I refuse to watch the movie
so badly, but I went and I saw it, and I, oh God, I,
why does this I happen
can't
to
conceive
me?
Of how a movie can be both accurate to the book and actually work as a movie.
It doesn't really work as a movie. They tried very, very hard, don't get me wrong. But it's the reason the movie kind of got panned, because they did try hard to make it work as a movie without stepping too far away from the book.
Yeah, and the problem is, like, half the book, nothing happens in.
Yeah, but it's just, what a gut-wrenching story.
Well,
have you read that, Ryan? The Road?
No.
By Cormac McCarthy?
No.
Why do I ask? Why do I do this to myself?
Masochism?
Apparently.
Speaking of, it's time to talk about some Hulk comics.
Silmarillion. Oh, comics, yeah.
So, today we have 5 Hulk comics and an Avengers in between, near the end.
It is pretty much right in the middle, actually.
Yeah.
We are gonna start off with Tales to Astonish, issue number 66B story. As soon as I friggin' go here. But this one is titled The Power of Dr. Banner. Oh, for God's sakes, one sec.
Did you give us the notes to get everything open and then you didn't have everything open yourself?
I have my synopsis open. I didn't have the actual entry open is the issue. But it's right here. I forgot about that. I forgot I read last night, okay? The Power of Dr. Banner. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko still together for now. Vincent Coletta's on inks. Jack Kirby and Bob Powell on that bad cover. Artie Simic on letters. February 1965 release date. This is a 10-page story, and I'll be taking this one. And no, I didn't necessarily give myself the Ditko stories on purpose, by the way. I just wanted to get my entries out of the way today.
Right. It's all right. I actually have some points to make that I think are a correction on what I said last week about Ditko in this.
Sure.
But we'll get to that when Kirby takes over, because it'll make more sense there.
The scientist who helped the Hulk finish this treat. Oh, yeah, I just realized Dan also has no fucking context to anything going on right now either, so this is going to be great.
Doesn't matter.
The scientist who helped the Hulk finishes treating the Hulk's ruins from his battle against the communist soldiers. Just then, the communist military commander arrives on the scene with a proton gun. When he is about to shoot the Hulk, the scientist jumps in the way, taking the shot for the giant creature. Fearing retribution from the Hulk, the commander flees. The Hulk realizes the commander killed one of the few people the Hulk considered a friend. This causes the Hulk to get angry and go on another rampage. Eventually, the Hulk... You couldn't let me get through one paragraph, huh?
Nope.
Eventually, the Hulk exerts himself too much and reverts back into Bruce Banner, who passes
out from
exhaustion.
That's
alright,
I was going to make a Red Hulk joke because he's in Russia.
Ooh, good. I like
that. All the while, the communist tank battalion draws ever closer. Meanwhile, back in the U.S., Glenn Talbot... reports to his superiors that they spotted Bruce Banner being taken into a communist sub. Talbot offers to go and get Banner back, but the request is denied. News of Banner being held behind the Iron Curtain gets to General Ross, who tells his daughter Betty. She cannot believe that Banner would defect to the communists. Talbot enters the room and tries to comfort her. By the way, this is why you'll like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because Talbot's in it.
No, that's not a reason.
Is he an absolute twat waffle in it too?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice.
See, not a reason.
Well, at the leader's lair, the leader is contacted once more by the chameleon, who informs him of Banner's capture by the communists. The leader then contacts one of the commissars of the communists to confirm that Banner and the Hulk are behind the Iron Curtain. When this is confirmed, the leader breaks contact. Yeah, by the way, the Hulk's one of his top films, The Leader, was introduced last week, so just to let you know, Dan. But yeah, the leader breaks contact, content that the Hulk would eventually defeat the communists and return to the States. Back behind the Iron Curtain, Bruce Banner finally wakes up to find the ruins he passed out in are being bombed by communist jet fighters. Banner runs for cover and eventually finds the body of the scientist who sacrificed his life for the Hulk. Remembering what happened, Banner gets mad enough to trigger his transformation into the Hulk just as a bomb blows up next to him. When the smoke clears, the Hulk is back and smashes all the airplanes in the area. Madder than ever, the Hulk then storms off to smash everything that stands in his way. The end.
So this is actually a pretty momentous issue, although they don't make an issue about it.
Riveting.
Because this is the first time the Hulk's powers work completely properly.
I didn't even realize that when reading. Really?
He now triggers it by getting angry and turns back into Banner when he calms down instead of when he gets angry again. And they also mention in this issue that he gets stronger as he gets madder.
I do remember that part, yeah. Yeah, what a bad issue to do it in.
I actually didn't mind this one. I mean, it was nothing special, but I didn't mind reading it.
I say that, but I gave it a 3. So it was fine.
I also
fine.
Gave it a 3. It was decent fun. I mean, it was just Hulk rampaging through an army, and that's always enjoyable.
Yeah, I think that's why it was so passable, because it was a lot of action. And Steve Ditko's a good artist, so. But yeah, let's move on to 67
now. I might as well actually mention this now, because it's going to become relevant pretty soon. But last week when I said that I thought that Stan and Steve probably got into a fight over the communist story because Steve didn't want to do it, I realized I probably had that backwards. I think this was a peace offering by Stan. Like, fine, we'll do your stupid communist story. Because as soon as Jack takes over, it's dropped in like 2 pages.
Fair enough. That very much could be the case then.
Yeah.
Though we were saying that maybe it was that we were thinking maybe that's part of a white. Well, no, because he gets taken off. It's not he leaves or anything, but yeah.
He gets taken off, but he might have gotten taken off because he wasn't really talking to Stan anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways,
issue 6. You can't really take him off Spider-Man or Doctor Strange, but you can totally take him off the Hulk. That's not his character.
True.
Yeah.
Number 67, Beast Away, where strides the behemoth. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. This is Steve Ditko's last Hulk, by the way. Frank Giacola is on inks. Jack Kirby, Chick Stone did this cover. Slightly better than the last. I mean, very so slightly. Artie Simic on letters. March,
I mean, these covers are hurting a lot by the Giant Man stories that are taking up most of them.
True. March 1965 release date and a 10-page story, and I will also take this one. Continuing from the last issue, the Hulk confronts the communist tank battalion that has been ordered to capture him. Making short work of the tanks, the Hulk then escapes, jumping further east in great leaps and bounds before stopping to rest in Mongolia. There, the Hulk stops in the mountains to rest, and in his exhaustion, reverts back into Bruce Banner. He is awakened sometime later by Kanga Khan, a Mongolian bandit chieftain. Banner explains the situation in that if they can get in touch with other Americans, they will be rewarded for returning them to the States. Realizing that Banner could be potentially worth a large sum of money, Kanga Khan agrees. Sounds like a wrestler. Word reaches the United States and Major Talbot is sent to retrieve Banner from Kanga Khan, arriving in Mongolia and meeting with Khan. Talbot demands to see Banner before making any payments. While Talbot confirms that the band does indeed have Banner as his hostage, a band of other thieves plot to kidnap Banner and ransom him off themselves. Attacking the village, the rebels outnumber Khan's men and orders them to run to the hills. Talbot and Banner manage to escape together. However, when in the mountains, they are pinned in one spot by enemy fire. Just then, the path they are standing on gives way, and both men are sent falling down the cliff.
Oh, he's a con man, then.
Oh, what? Sorry, I was trying to figure out what promotion Kanga Khan would have been in.
TNA.
I was going to say AWA.
Shit. These Hulk stories sound so much worse reading the synopsis back than I remember them being.
Yeah, this was actually another really fun story.
I gave this one a 3 as well.
And it was shockingly less racist than I expected.
That too.
Okay.
Because it's like they're going to Mongolia, and I'm just like, oh, shit.
Steve Ditko's doing some...
They're going
to
be yellow, aren't they?
Steve Ditko's doing some truly good work to not make these stories shitty. Because they really probably should be, but they're not.
This entire run of Hulk this week, I actually found myself looking forward to reading the next issue. But I also gave this one 3. Just to be clear, I hadn't actually said that.
Well, I don't have anything else to say about that one, so let's move on to when Finn's... Well, this one's actually fine. It's not yet that the series starts to crumble a little bit, but...
The series doesn't crumble too badly this week. And like I
think
said,
I didn't like some of this week, so...
Maybe, but it doesn't... The ones I didn't like fall next week.
But this one is number 68 B-Story. This one's titled Back from the Dead. The Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's here. We got Mike Esposito on inks. Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito did the cover. Artie Simicon letters. April 1965 release date. 10-page story. And Bill will take this one away.
All right.
Away with you, laddie.
Let's see how fast we can get out of Mongolia now that Steve's not writing or drawing on this anymore. Talbot and Banner are falling to their doom after making their escape from Mongolian bandits. The fall causes Banner to change into the Hulk, who saves Talbot, who is knocked unconscious by the speed of the fall. On the ground, the Hulk decides that he wants to go home, so he jumps all the way back to the States, leaving Talbot behind. So the answer is 2 sentences.
Okay.
When the Hulk is returning home, the leader is plotting his next attempt at capturing the Hulk by shrinking his humanoids down to microscopic size for easy smuggling. The Hulk arrives back in New Mexico and seeks refuge inside Bruce Banner's home. Falling asleep, the Hulk changes back into Banner, who awakens sometime later to find General Ross, Betty, and an entire army in his room. Banner is quickly arrested.
Janky.
Yeah, I know. I wonder what was going on in between panels there.
Yeah.
Days later, having been rescued and returned home, Major Talbot addresses the president with his concerns that the Hulk and Bruce Banner are in league with the communists, not knowing that the president was informed of the Hulk's true identity by Rick Jones. The president informs Talbot that the Absorbitron on Astra Island is ready for testing again and that he and Bruce Banner are to go back and test it again. While the arrangements are being made, the leader flies over to Astra Island and dusts it with his microscopic humanoids. Meanwhile, in jail again, Bruce Banner is visited by Rick Jones, who is also beginning to question Banner's loyalty to his country. Talbot then arrives to take Banner to the test site, but first rails him for leaving him behind. Kinky.
Yeah.
Angered by the idea of leaving Talbot to die.
Somebody's gonna get knocked up.
Angered by the idea of leaving Talbot to die, Banner almost loses control of himself, but Rick manages to calm him down before he can change into the Hulk. Arriving on Astra Island, Banner and Talbot enter the control room of the Absorbitron. As they are doing so, the leader orders the humanoids to grow to their natural size and seize the two men. Talbot tries to hold off the humanoids, but is easily knocked out. The humanoids then attack Banner, prompting his transformation into the Hulk. The Hulk, however, is quickly subdued by knockout gas. With the Absorbitron and the Hulk soon to be in his hands, the leader turns his ship around to collect his prize. And we don't even get a period to end that story.
I don't know about you guys, but it kind of starting to sound like Bruce Banner left his dignity in Mongolia.
Or in the bedroom. It depends which way you want to look at it.
I don't know. I think it'd be pretty dignified if you woke up in that situation and was like, yeah, I'm cool.
Look at all these people in my room. Obviously pretty open-minded.
Jack Kirby's here, and so far it's fine. I still gave this one a 3. This one was pretty good.
I also gave this a 3, but I almost got whiplash from how quick they ditched the communist Mongolia plot to go back to the leader.
I was kind of happy about that. Although I was happy to see the leader, but not the adaptoids. The humanoids, I mean.
They didn't bother me as much in this half of the story. They're not...
I think they bothered me more.
I found they were never, like, the main antagonist.
Well, they're not, but I don't want to see them.
That's fair. I mean,
they have go away heat with me.
Yeah, I just found the other times they showed up, it was much worse when they'd have, like, half an issue of the Hulk fighting with them. Here they're on panel for, like, 2 pages as a Deus Ex Machina to capture the Hulk, and then you don't see him anymore.
I think that makes it worse for me. I'd rather you try to make them a menace, at least. Like, a logical one where... I don't know, where they're actually battling and not just something that fucking easily take care of the Hulk for fucking a comic.
They kind of painted themselves into a corner with them, though, by establishing that they're virtually indestructible to bludgeoning, which is what the Hulk does.
They shouldn't have fucking created them, but here we are.
No, they're bad villains. Like,
they're awful.
They shouldn't have created them. They're just, I find them less troublesome when they're just kind of show up in the background and disappear again. They're like the Mole Man's henchmen now.
Well, it's
they're stupid looking and annoying, but they're not there that long.
It's because for you, you go by the logic of, oh, they're on my page less time, so I'm not as bothered by it.
Yeah. They're a thing I can largely ignore to get on to the better story with the Hulk and the leader.
Well, I'm just looking at it like, so not only do they suck, but now I can't take them seriously at all, really, either. So, I don't know.
I mean, they're pink and they look like they have a condom over their head. I wasn't taking them seriously when they were presented as a menace.
No. No, but... Yes.
If something's stupid, I'd rather it just be treated like it's stupid.
Hopefully they don't last long.
On that topic, Monster House.
Let's just move on to number 69, I think. The B story here.
Drive that knife a little deeper, Bill.
I was going to say Rob Zombie, but I like his music.
Dragula.
I like some of his music. Actually, no, I do like that song.
It's just overplayed for you.
It's overplayed, but it wasn't actually that bad. It's very, very early 2000s.
Yeah. Anyways, this one is titled Trapped in the Lair of the Leader. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby here. Mike Esposito on inks. Jack Kirby, Sol Brodsky's at the cover. Probably the best cover that we've seen today, but that's not saying much.
Like 90% Hulk, which instantly makes it better.
Artie Simic's on letters. May 1965 release date. 10-page story. And Bill will take this one away.
Alright. Just give me a second.
Or maybe they won't. Or maybe not, brother.
My window just decided to not want to load with the second Hulk story in it. But here we are. The leader's humanoids have succeeded in knocking out the Hulk. The leader himself arrives on Astra Island to collect the Hulk and the Absorbitron for more study. Before the Navy can stop the leader, he manages to escape in his ship, transporting the Absorbitron and the Hulk along with him via magnetic beam. We are now in peak Stan does not understand magnets.
Yeah, we mentioned that before.
Though. No, we're not. Those last two X-Men I read? Oh my god.
Yeah, he continues to not understand magnets for quite a while. The military land on the island and revive Major Talbot, and the group search for Bruce Banner but find him missing. Meanwhile, the leader's secret base is located in the southwest. The leader attempts to examine the Hulk's body but finds that his devices cannot pierce the Hulk's dense skin, and so he begins working on stronger components. While distracted, he misses seeing that the gas he used to knock out the Hulk has triggered his transformation back into Bruce Banner. Banner awakens and then begins modifying one of the leader's devices to send out Morse code to alert someone to his location. Back at base, General Ross and Major Talbot discuss the situation, Ross explaining that when they find Banner, he wants him shot on sight. Overhearing this, Rick Jones hurries to Bruce's secret lab out in the desert to figure out a way to find Bruce himself, and soon notices one of the devices is picking up Bruce's Morse code. Realizing the army will pick up the signal as well and shoot him on sight, Rick rushes to rescue Bruce by himself. Indeed, the army does pick it up and soon sends an attack force to get Banner. Meanwhile, the leader notices the Hulk is not on the table where he left him and figures that the Hulk is trying to escape and floods the room with twice the dosage of gas. This causes Banner to change into the Hulk once more, who goes on a rampage in the leader's lab and smashes his way out of the room he was captive in. The leader tries to shoot at the Hulk, but his attack appears ineffectual. The Hulk then smashes the Absorbitron, causing the leader to flee. Crashing through the base, the Hulk eventually encounters the army, who attack him. Rushing past the soldiers, Rick Jones finally makes it to the front line to find that the Hulk soldiers have stopped fighting because they have found Bruce Banner, and to all present, he appears to be dead. Well, okay, it would be nice if they mentioned that he got shot in the head. That's why he appears to be dead.
Small
detail. But that's the end of the story.
The funny thing is, this one had the best synopsis in terms of sound and, like, a good story, but I didn't like this one. And this also has the highest rating so far today of on the site we use, the Complete Marvel Read and Order site. But I didn't like this one. I gave this one a 2. I can't even really tell you why at this point, because I read this weeks ago. But I did not like this one.
It's kind of a transition issue, and a lot of stuff happens off-panel that might have pissed you off.
There's your hot take for today, folks.
I think in their defense, that was mandated by the comic code, because you can't exactly show Bruce getting shot in the fucking head in a comic.
That type of thing doesn't bug me as much as you'd almost think it would. I will say one of the things I know that did piss me off about this issue is already doing a "oh, he's dead" story. I don't want to see that already. But that's part of my issue of knowing what's to come as well. But it's also come on. Like, Jack Kirby comes on and we're doing a fucking "is he dead" story now. I think this is the first
"is he dead" story in the order, so it didn't really bother me that much.
It is, but why are we doing it with the Hulk? That's my thing.
Probably because it gives them, spoilers, an easy out.
I don't know. Something about it didn't sit right with me.
I actually really liked this one. I still only gave it a 3, but it would have been a 2, but Banner getting shot elevated it for me.
There's something else about this one for sure that bugged me, and I don't remember what it was.
Probably Rick. Rick was very annoying in this one.
I was going to say it was probably something to do with Rick, because when you brought him up in the synopsis, I had like this tingling sensation
Rick
in my head.
Rick was very annoying in this one.
That was probably what it was then. Because he's officially not... I turned on Rick Jones a bit ago now, so...
He's done the only useful thing he will do in a Hulk comic, pretty much. One of two only useful things he will do in a Hulk comic, pretty much. Because I remembered how the Hulk gets out of being dead.
Not dying.
Well, spoilers. At this point, Bruce is actually dead.
Yay! I mean, aww.
Yeah, he is, and it leads to, it leads to more stuff I don't really like, so... I guess the
next... That's where things start going off the rails. It's not bad in the next issue, but I don't like it conceptually.
Yeah. Well, let's,
go on to the next one.
Take a one little break from the Hulk for now and get into this Avengers issue, which is pretty much a Hulk comic anyway. Half of it, so...
I don't know. Hulk's not really in it, other than, like, reprinted panels to kind of keep you aware of the time.
He's in a third of it or so.
They reprint, like, 6 panels from the last issues of Hulk, just to kind of keep you aware of the timeline.
This one is Avengers number 17. Avengers number 17, 4 against the Minotaur. This one went up, I think, in its average rating since I looked at it last. Stanley writing this one, Don Heck on art, Dick Ayers on inks. At least this book has a good art team. Literus on Sam Rowe, that's the only thing that got going for it, really.
Too bad this art team can't draw a fucking Minotaur.
Yeah, maybe it's a load of bull.
Maybe they shouldn't have worked. Maybe they shouldn't have booked Minotaur.
That's what I was saying. Even Mantar would look better.
Letters are by Sam Rosen. April 1965 release date. 20 page. So the same month as the last issue. 20 page story. And Dan will have the pleasure of taking this one. Because I went with the funniest option this week.
Well, I'm sorry. Just looking at the cover, I'm not sure who the big lime green fellow is. It's supposed to be the Hulk. It looks like Forrest Gump with a bad haircut. I mean,
it's better than a lot of Kirby's Hulks.
It is one of Kirby's Hulks. On the cover?
No.
Yeah, we don't have cover credit. Yeah, that probably is Kirby.
It could be. Actually, it probably is Kirby.
It says
yeah.
Jack Kirby.
That's definitely Kirby. Look at the Minotaur's face.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a
Kirby
cover.
That's basically Mangog.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of. Thanks, Bill. I thought he looked like another character I knew.
That's because that's how Kirby draws big monsters.
Yeah, it's just, that's a Kirby
cover. Can only draw one big monster. What can't the guy do?
That's actually probably why the Minotaur looked so crap in this, because Don Heck was trying to draw like Kirby, and Don Heck's always kind of bad at drawing like Kirby.
Yeah. Kirby's bad at drawing like Kirby sometimes.
True.
Yes, that is true. But, he's the only one that can really pull off that style.
Yeah. There's a certain lack of consistency even on Kirby's part sometimes. It's just like, oh my God.
But with them bringing the Hulk in and reprinting panels from the last couple of Kirby Hulks, I think Don Heck tried to draw more like Kirby so that it didn't feel out of place.
Yeah.
And it definitely hurt on the Minotaur.
The art wasn't as good as it has been. It wasn't awful, mind you, but it wasn't as good as it has been in recent times in Avengers and stuff.
This is probably the worst Avengers since, like, 10.
Because interior art on Avengers has actually been good since Kirby stepped aside.
Yeah.
Ooh. Wow. Okay,
Avengers
has
consistently had about the best interior art.
It's what carries it through the relatively shit times it's been having.
Yeah.
The only real Avengers I legitimately actually really enjoyed was the Wonder Man issue. That was, like, and maybe the Cap issue, too, when he came back, but those two are the only two, probably.
I think the only one I liked was when Cap came back.
I think the Wonder Man one's really good, but I like that kind of story.
I did not like Wonder Man.
I like that kind of story, though. Anyways, sorry, Dan.
That's all right. It's all good. All right, Four Against the Minotaur. The new team is uncertain about the future. Rick Jones is upset that three Johnny-come-lately heroes have already been made official Avengers, while he's still just Cap's sidekick. I thought Bucky was a sidekick. They gotta get
so
this
did Cap, out. But Rick wants to be Bucky in every sense, including dressing up like him and confronting Cap in his bedroom.
Well, then he better buck up, didn't he?
God, I wish I was making that up.
The cocky Hawkeye takes
it may not have been in Cap's bedroom.
Ooh. Well.
But everything else was entirely true.
Yeah. Are we done with that one?
Yes, I'm done making
anybody
fun of Rick Jones.
Anybody want to take that
now?
Further?
I'm not touching it.
Okay. The cocky Hawkeye takes a dim view of some old Methuselah, Cap, leading the team and suggests they vote on who should be leader. Quicksilver.
Rick wants Cap to look at his cocky, too.
Ooh. Best put a condom on that thing.
Make sure it's pink.
Ooh.
Just a random humanoid.
Yep.
Much like Rick, it's microscopic.
Oh, it's cold. So Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch both support Cap as leader. Before heading out on a mission to locate the Hulk, whom Cap wants to convince to rejoin the team, Cap leads a new team in a training session in the mansion's underground combat simulation room. Okay. In the middle
they
of
wanted
the session,
danger room.
Yes, it's yeah. literally the danger room. They even credit Xavier.
Mm-hmm. In the middle of the training session, a robot breaks in. After disabling it, it informs them that the Hulk is in the desert. On a horse with no name. The robot was sent by the Mole Man. And the Avengers are lured to his subterranean underworld and into his trap. Seems to be a mole in there somewhere. Coincidentally, though, the Hulk is indeed nearby, although in the midst of combating his adversary, the leader. Okay. The Avengers are attacked by the Minotaur. The creature belonging to the Mole Man. Quicksilver is separated from the team and captured by the Moloids. The Moloids.
Yeah, those are not a new thing. They've been around since like the second Mole Man story.
It sounds like
Dan doesn't really pay attention to Fantastic Four, let's be honest.
No, I don't. I won't lie. So
I don't pay attention to anything with the Mole Man in it. Yeah. Or Tyrannus. Or whatever, Queen Nala, or whatever the hell her name was.
Yeah. It does. But the Moloids?
Really,
it does.
Anything in the subterranean I don't pay attention to.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ro.
Yeah. The three remaining Avengers trap the Minotaur and then search for Quicksilver. Upon freeing him, the team escape the Mole Man's underground caverns. Captain America says he's convinced the new team were effective enough without the big green giant. They don't need the Hulk on the team. Oh, well, that's terrible. Elsewhere, it appears that Bruce Banner, following the end of the Hulk's battle with the leader, has died. Bum, bum, bum. Just in case anybody cares.
Yeah, the cliffhanger for this issue is literally Hulk being dead from Hulk's own comic.
Yeah. So, that's it?
Yeah.
This is a comic of a team of heroes.
I'm not sure I'd use that term for 50%
heroes.
Of this team. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one I didn't hate nearly as much as the other Cap's Quirky Quartet ones. Because...
Really?
Well, they're new here. I don't... Like, half this comic is them bickering.
There's actually a lot of charm to this first one in the team's interactions.
Where?
Yeah.
In the team's interactions, except for the fact that even when the team's interactions are fun, it could be better if there was another person there that was like Cap, where it was a fully good person. And Scarlet Witch is
they
there, but she's a woman and she's not treated.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they
important.
Tried to do it with Scarlet Witch, but she's a woman and this is written in the 60s, so no one wants to give her any level of authority.
So, if there was another... figurehead type of person here. I almost wish that I understand why they went the route they did, but I almost wish that maybe Iron Man stayed behind or something to level it out a little bit. But
I think his contract for Marvel was done, so that's why he's not there.
I didn't mind the bickering here. It gets tedious going on because they never move beyond this point. Like they have a realization here. That, hey, maybe Cap's not so bad and can lead this team. And then they have that same revelation in every Avengers until they change the team. Yeah.
It goes a little deeper maybe in the next one, but it won't go past that, I can't imagine.
Oh, no, it'll reset to the status quo again afterwards. It's basically every single one is they bicker, they don't respect Cap as leader. Cap comes up with a plan that works, and then they respect Cap as leader until the next issue.
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist, and... I will say, while I gave it credit and its charm for that, I actually didn't like this overall issue and gave it a 2.
It barely eked out a 3 with me.
This one, over big picture, was not good. The Hulk shit was lame. It was fucking lame. They're building this up as the Avengers trying to get him back on a team. And there's no fucking actual crossover because they're just trying to get you to read the Hulk.
Yeah, and I think the thing that saved this for me was I viewed this as an issue that wasn't supposed to have high stakes. This was just, here's the new team, here's what they do, here's their dynamics.
The Minotaur sucks.
The Minotaur does suck, but he's not supposed to be good. This issue isn't about the villain, this issue's about the team.
No, but, and I would accept that if it was just the Minotaur, but the Minotaur on top of the stupid Hulk shit and all that and whatever, that gets
Hulk
a 2 out of me.
Yeah, the Hulk shit was kind of cheap.
It was a bad cheap. It was a bad, bad cheapo.
It was. About the seeming cross or contradiction with Rick, I actually figured it out when I was reading this.
It's because they're jumping across different points in time, aren't they?
Yeah, it's subtle, and they don't make it obvious in the comic. Like, even I noticed the summary missed it. But between the training center and the danger room and the scene with Rick Jones earlier, at least a week has passed.
Yeah, I realized it as we were talking.
So in that time, Rick has flown out to New Mexico. And so it's not actually a contradiction from him to be at the start here.
When I was reading it, I don't think I realized there was the time pass. So that's why I was saying it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, you definitely didn't. But this one picks up pretty much right after the last issue of Avengers.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from that shitty comic and get to the last Hulk for today, which is issue number 70 of Tales of Astonish the Beast Story. This one, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby going at it. Mike Esposito's on inks. Mike Esposito, Jack Kirby doing the cover. It's actually, this is the best cover of the week, to be honest. Artie Simmons.
It's pure Namor.
It's pure Namor. Let's go, baby.
Got a little bit of Hulk at the bottom, but that doesn't matter.
Artie Simmons on letters. I wish I was reading Namor. May 1965 release. I can't believe I said that out loud, by the way. Page 10-page story, and Dan will take this one.
That was a good
one.
Namor.
It was. The whole first run of it was good.
Okay. You sure you want me to do this?
Why not? I like this one.
Oh, well, here we go. To live
not
again.
To spoil.
While preparing yet another device to destroy the Hulk, Ross fumes over the loss of the Absorbitron and the apparent death of Bruce Banner, when one of his subordinates informs him that Banner's body has gone missing. God, that's so biblical. Elsewhere in the desert, Rick Jones takes the inert body of Bruce Banner to Banner's hidden laboratory and bombards it with more gamma radiation in hopes of reviving Banner. Banner's body turns into the Hulk and revives. That's convenient. That's very convenient. Where Rick is startled to learn that the Hulk has retained Banner's mind. To make matters worse, Banner informs Rick that if he were to change back into his human form, he would surely die. Why they call him Shirley, I don't know, but I thought it was Bruce. But he decides to find a way to make his change into the Hulk permanent.
It's Robert Bruce Shirley Banner.
Robert Bruce Shirley Banner? Okay.
And not spoil anything, but he does have multiple personalities, so...
No, apparently. Elsewhere, the leader is contacted by his employers, who berate the leader for his failure to obtain the Absorbitron. The leader offers him an even greater weapon for $1 million. However, the communists are not sold and tell the leader that he will only get the money if he proves his claims by destroying a missile base. The leader agrees and unleashes his latest creation, a gigantic humanoid, which he sends into the desert to go and destroy a nearby missile base.
I forgot about the giant humanoid.
Yeah.
I love what happens to it.
All opposition in its path are unable to destroy the gigantic humanoid. Meanwhile, at the Nevada military base, Glenn Talbot tells Betty of Banner's apparent demise and the suspicion that he may have been a traitor to his country. It's terrible, really. I can see what Betty's
thinking. Who can you
trust? I know, but, I mean, I'd go out with Wilma, but I'd be thinking of Betty.
That was a Red Dwarf reference, Ryan.
Just so you know, Ryan. Yeah. Both are unaware that the Hulk... I totally lost track after that. Both are unaware that the Hulk had arrived on the base and is listening to in on their conversation. The Hulk concludes that in the state that he is in, he will let Betty believe what she may, so she may live a normal life without the Hulk. Just then, considering how much she sleeps around, I can see why. Just then, the humanoid arrives at the base and begins its attack. The military's counterattack does not work, and the Hulk bounds in to try and stop the creature itself. However, the Hulk's strength is still not enough to defeat the creature either. Undaunted, the Hulk tries again and starts bounding towards the humanoid. At that moment, Ross has ordered their new Sunday Punch super missile to be deployed against the creature. Overhearing this, Rick tries to warn the Hulk, but Banner chooses to ignore Rick's pleas, continues on his path to destroy the humanoid, and the story is continued if anybody gives a crap.
Oh, what a cliffhanger for next week. Can't even believe it. Yeah. I actually like that one for some reason. I will explain
because
why I like
no
that
taste?
One. And it wasn't for the giant humanoid, though. That it probably was the best use of the humanoid, to be fair.
This is the best humanoid, especially because, spoilers, it goes down like a complete bitch.
If we know anything from Marvel, if you make something bigger, it always goes well.
Betty seems to think so.
I don't know if she doesn't have the Hulk anymore. Anyway.
Yeah.
But
she'll have Glenn in like 10 years. That'll carry her over.
Ooh.
That's not me joking either. She marries Glenn.
Yeah, you talked about it last week too. What was I going to say? Oh, why I like this. I like this one because I actually think they did the revival really well here. In the actual self-contained portion of the revival itself of using the well-established already device from the original series and the past to bring him back and Rick Jones being useful, and it kind of all makes sense, and there's actually some logic to it, knowing the stuff we know more modernly in science with how, like, you can bring somebody back with some after so long, within however long, if there's any measure of life left.
Yeah, and this actually works better with the Hulk as he's established now than it would with future Hulk, because at this point, they're not split personalities of Banner.
No.
The Hulk is still its own thing.
They're not for
so
a long time.
So while he failed to revive Banner, he was able to bring the Hulk back. And, like, combine them into one person. It's the same idea the MCU used with Smart Hulk.
It was a freshen up for the series where... And it kind of works for right now, too, where... He's stuck being the Hulk. Although it gets ridiculous after this.
Oh yeah, it gets really tedious really fast. But at this point, it's still interesting.
It was a good idea, not executed well. In the long run. It was executed well for this issue.
Marvel 1967. It was a good year. Good idea, not executed well.
Shit. But yeah, that's about all I have to say. I thought this one was better than the last one, but...
This one was better than last one, for sure.
The site
the only reason
with...
the last one got a 3 from me was the fact that they had the audacity to kill Banner. And this one got a 3 on the merits of the entire story.
What big balls they had.
And, for the record, this was the second useful thing Rick Jones did.
Yeah, probably the last two, but we'll see.
It was. I only recall him being useful twice, and this is the second time. Talking to Lyndon Johnson, and then reviving Hulk.
Yeah, you missed Lyndon Johnson last week there, Dan. Pretty wild.
So did the assassin.
Fuck. So that was this week's comics. Next week we have 4 more Hulk to go. Astonish issues 71 through 74. That would be the Beast Stories. And then we have, what is after that? It is...
Two Spider-Man, I think.
I think you're right. I just lost myself.
Oh, I'm
going to
be sick next week. I'm sorry.
You don't want to see it going?
No, not Two Spider-Man, because there's a Surgeon Fury that breaks them up. Amazing Spider-Man 24 and then Surgeon Fury 19. So.
Oh, I hate that Spider-Man.
Which is a really good Surgeon Fury, so I'm excited to cover that.
Nice.
But I mean, you'll probably not like it as much as I did, but you'd never do, so we'll see.
I just saw the synopsis on the site. That actually sounds pretty good.
It was my favorite issue so far. It actually could be for you too, but we'll see. Because it dives more into grief stuff, and I think it's done well. Yeah.
And we get to see the wheels completely come off on Hulk.
Yes, very fast and very. Wildly.
I had a snide joke about someone having watched Star Trek in it, but these were published before that season of Star Trek.
Oh.
Because they fight, because Hulk fights a Gorn.
They say...
It's not called a Gorn, and it's red, but it's a Gorn.
A wise man once said, well, wise debatable, but wise man once said they were going to keep going till the wheels fell off, and Hulk just kept going.
Hulk regrouped him and kept going because it actually gets pretty good after this arc.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Well, on that note, we are going to get out of here. Please, if you would like to subscribe, comment even share if you would like to if you're on YouTube. Available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, let us know why you love the fucking humanoids. Anyways.
Please, if someone can make a strong case for them, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, me too.
They're no worse than the Avengers, the X-Men, or Fantastic Four? Go ahead, argue with me on this. I dare you.
I can't argue on Avengers. I could argue on X-Men right now.
Really?
Right now. We're in a good stretch of X-Men right now. And Fantastic Four...
I've heard the Locust.
...are relatively fine.
The Fantastic Four are crap.
Ben's there. So
they're no worse than Fantastic Four.
Well,
certainly
they're
no
better
worse
than Johnny
Avengers.
Storm.
Yeah, sometimes
that.
No personality is actually better.
Garfield is better than Johnny Storm.
Garfield's better than the Fantastic Four.
Garfield's awesome. Good. That's not a good comparison.
I'll even take Garfield over Ben Grimm. Ben Grimm's my boy,
okay.
But Garfield.
Andy Knapp is better than Fantastic Four. That's probably before your time, isn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, I have no clue what the fuck you're talking
about. Ouch.
I'm not helping you on that one, Dan.
Yeah, do you remember Andy Knapp, Bill?
I've heard of a comic strip called Andy Knapp that old people talked about when I was a kid.
Okay, ow. God. You did a couple of TikTok.
The best part about that roast is that it wasn't actually a roast. That was just the truth.
I was just
still
being honest.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I weep for your generation. I really do.
Well, yeah, you should be for the inflation. Anyways,
oh, no.
Let's get out
no,
of here.
For more reasons than that.
We shall see you all in the next episode. Well, Dan
might...
The fact
that none of us can afford to own a home is probably more depressing than the fact that we didn't read a mediocre newspaper comic strip from the 50s.
Well, that's okay.
True.
Advertisements for homes are longer than your average TikTok video, so you'd never be able to get through the advertisement.
Anyways, I'm going to go watch some TikToks. Dan may or may not be here next week, and we will see you all next time.
Yeah,
I may or may.
Have a good one.